You're listening to Idaho Matters on Boise State Public Radio News, and I'm Gemma Gaudette. So what's going on with the new variant of COVID in the U.S. and in China? And what about rapid tests? Are they working on this new strain? Also, the bivalent booster has now been out since August. Is that having any impact? Well, here today to answer those questions is Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. And remember, if you have questions for Dr. Pate relating to public health, please email us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Hi, Dr. Pate.
Hi, Gemma.
So, Dr. Pate, let's talk about this latest variant that we are seeing, and it's called XBB.1.5.
That's right. And this has garnered a lot of attention because this variant is the most immune evasive one yet. Now, another disclaimer, as we've talked about many times on this show before, when I am saying immune evasive, we're really talking about the ability of that virus to get around antibodies. Now, whether from infection or from vaccination. But keep in mind, as we've said over and over again, our immune system is far more complex than just antibodies. It doesn't completely get around everything. So it doesn't mean that we're helpless, but it does mean that this variant is going to be one that is, what we're seeing is highly transmissible, and you cannot rely on your past vaccination or infection history to assure yourself you won't get infected. If you are vaccinated, and we'll talk about it with the bivalent, you are going to have much more protection against severely getting ill, but the chances that you can get infected to begin with have increased with this variant.
And what are we seeing in terms of rates of this particular variant, I guess, here in the U.S., because there was a lot of hand-wringing and concern about variants arising in China?
Yeah, we're right to be concerned about what's happening in China. But I did note, I think, on my Twitter feed, the irony of the CDC throwing stones when it's in a glass house, because we certainly have been caught blindsided a few times. We're not doing all that we need to be doing. So what happened with this XBB.1.5, and here's for your listeners, you know, most of the time your listeners are used to hearing us call variants with a letter starting B. But if you see a letter X in anything that we talk about, what that means is it's a recombinant. In other words, instead of just the virus mutating, what has happened is two different strains, if you will, have exchanged some of their genetic parts. So, think of the magician that has that string of rope, cuts the rope, and then magically puts it back together. Well, imagine those are two different viruses and we're putting two parts of those back together. That's what any of the variants that start with X are. So this is a recombinant, and this is the first recombinant that has gotten to be this prominent. We first identified it in October on the 22nd in New York State. The U.S. Accounts for, the vast majority of these sequences across the world, although it is starting to spread in Canada and in Europe. As of yesterday, it had grown 40% over the prior week here in our own testing in the United States. New York has the most, followed by Connecticut, followed by Massachusetts, followed by New Jersey. So you can see it's up particularly in the Northwest, but then coming in fifth place is California. And it has been identified in 43 states, including Idaho. And it's also in Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico. And what is concerning about this is, number one, Because we have allowed all this kind of unrestrained transmission, as I've talked many times, the virus has just been given liberty to keep experimenting to try to figure out what advantages it the most in real life humans. And so that's one of the big reasons why we're getting all these immune evasive strains. But what has happened is that the monoclonal antibodies, and these are the treatments that we give really sick people that end up in the hospital or people that are at very high risk. Sometimes we give this to them. They've stopped working. So the FDA just revoked the emergency use authorization for the last monoclonal antibody that we had available in November. We do have one other, but it's only authorized for some very, very specific situations that won't apply to most people. And the other thing that's concerning is Evusheld, the drug that we use to protect our immunocompromised friends and family members, it appears it no longer neutralizes this virus and many of the other ones circulating. Now, does that mean that Evusheld won't help at all? We're not clear. Binding antibodies as opposed to neutralizing antibodies do help. We're just not sure how much. And so the focus has been on neutralizing antibodies. And let me explain to the listeners again what antibodies do as part of the immune system. The big thing about antibodies is they are part of your defense before the virus gets into your cells. Because once the virus gets into the cell, then that's kind of like the free spot when you're playing tag or whatever, where you can't, the antibody can't get you. So what having antibodies around, either through Evusheld for the immunocompromised or through vaccination for us, is it allows them to be at the ready to attack the virus before it gets into the cells and infects us, to hopefully make sure that we get a very mild case if we're going to get infected. The other concern that we've seen with this variant is, you remember, for 2 years, 3 years now, almost, we've been talking about the ACE2 the ACE2 receptor, which is what the virus binds to. This virus has very high affinity for that receptor, meaning it binds it tightly. What's that? What's the significance of that? What it appears is that if it binds it really tightly, then it will increase the transmissibility. And that's certainly what we're seeing. There's a big jump with this strain that if you get this, you can infect more people than what we previously saw with some of the other strains. And then there's a theoretical concern, and I qualify that theoretical because we haven't proven this, but one would worry that if it does bind these receptors more tightly, then it can actually infect a broader range of cells that don't have nearly as much ACE2 as would have been available to prior variants. And there's a theoretical risk this could increase the number of cases of long COVID that we'll see. I don't know whether that's the case. I hope to God no. And then I'll say the last thing is we look at growth rates with these new variants. We want to see how fast is it growing in proportion to what was the previously most common. Our previously most common was the BQ1.1. And the growth rate for this variant is about 11 to 12% per day more favorable than BQ1.1. So what does that mean? Well, typically what we've observed is if you get a new variant that emerges and it's increasing and it has a growth advantage over 10, and I said this one looks like it's 11 to 12, it is very likely it will cause a new surge with a surge of hospitalization. So I think that's what we've got to be concerned about.
So let's talk about the bivalent variant. Sorry, the booster, because this is out in August, as I said in the very beginning of the show. How is it working in terms of all of these variants, or do we know yet?
Well, we didn't know. The FDA gave the emergency use authorization, I believe, the very last day of November. So it would, I'm sorry, of August. So it would have become available to most people in September. I think that's when most of us got it. And at that point, it was really betting on the come. It was a reasonable choice. We knew that the variants had really diversified a lot from the original strain. We thought it's probably going to be important to give people exposure to this newest spike protein, but we didn't know. But now the good news is we have quite a number of studies that are very encouraging, including one that came out, I just think last week, I believe, from Israel. And it's showing that compared to getting the prior booster, the monovalent, the regular shot that all of us started out with, the bivalent does protect, gives extra protection against getting severe disease. It appears that it will boost the antibodies, that those neutralizing antibodies that we talked about that are the best for XBB.1.5, which we've just been talking about, you know, perhaps on the order of 4 to 5 fold. We don't know if that's enough, but that, boy, you want all that you can get, as I mentioned. So that's a big help. But in Israel, they actually looked at kind of the vaccine effectiveness. How effective was it at preventing people from being hospitalized or dying? And it looked like it had upwards of 80% better performance compared to the regular booster. So for all of you that have been kind of holding out and not sure whether you should get the bivalent, if you have not gotten the bivalent, I sure do recommend it. And I got it.
And I did too, for all of those reasons. Now, before we take a break, I want to talk about one other thing. You and I briefly talked about this offline, and this is about wastewater testing on airline flights. And I mean, I know, you know, my family and I, we still wear masks on airplanes. I don't know if I'll ever change that habit, Dr. Pate. And I think, you know, what we found out about this is a good reason.
Yes, this was very interesting. And you're right, I alerted you to this very fascinating study that came out. You know, I think airplanes have been a really important topic because we have seen the CDC repeatedly take some actions that didn't quite make sense with the science, and we didn't know if it was political, you know, influence from the White House, or in this case, maybe from the airline industry. We do know that the mask requirements certainly put a lot of pressures and difficulties on the airline industry, but it led to a lot of people wrongly concluding that, and partly because the airlines were saying this, that you know, the air handling is so great on airplanes that you don't have to worry about catching it. Well, you know, first of all, if you just think back pre-COVID, I remember times being on the plane and somebody across the aisle hacking, and then sure enough, 2 or 3 days later, I'm sick. And we know that certainly there are some good things that airlines do, but the question is it enough? And the answer is it's probably not, because we have well documented significant spread of COVID on flights. So what this study was done by the Health Department of Malaysia. And this came out last week, I think. They were looking at international flights coming in to Kuala Lumpur so that they could see were people coming in with COVID, and could they do some analysis about what variants they might be bringing in. So what they did is they just tested the wastewater from the toilets of the plane twice a week from June to December of 22. And what they showed is that 288 of their samples, which were positive, that represented 95.7% of all their flights. So What does that mean? Well, you know, these are PCR tests. And as we've talked about, you can be PCR positive even after you have kind of passed the infectious phase. So we don't know that all of these cases represented somebody who was actually infectious, but surely many did. And so what I think the point is that, and especially at 96%, you just have to assume that there are going to be people on those flights that are positive. In fact, as I said, we've documented many outbreaks pretty well. And so here's my advice. If you really don't want to be masked during the flight, I get it. You want to, you know, eat or drink or whatever it is. Okay. The most dangerous points are when the plane is sitting at the gate or the plane is sitting on the tarmac. And that is because to save power and money and fuel and so forth, they often are not running the air exchange and the filtering at the levels that you want. So at least wear a high quality mask when you're boarding, unboarding, and when you're sitting on the ground. If you want to wait till you get up at good altitude, turn on your overhead oxygen there, or not the oxygen, but the airflow, turn that all the way up, direct it down at your head or your feet, and then take your mask off then.
Good advice. We heard from a Kenyon County listener who asked, what's happening with the trifecta cases right now in the Treasure Valley, COVID, flu, RSV, and what is Dr. Pate hearing from the hospitals and primary health clinics? Are state authorities monitoring wastewater still? It's hard to find out the status of things.
Yeah, so let me give you just kind of a quick overview. First of all, you're right. We've been focusing on that trifecta, but also understand there's a lot of other viruses circulating too. In fact, if you look at visits to doctors or emergency rooms for influenza-like illnesses, doesn't have to be flu, but you know, people have flu symptoms, we're at a near record. I had to go back to 2009 to when we had higher levels than what we have right now. And I think you'll find that's reflected by, I have gotten many requests for help from people who cannot find cold remedies and at drugstores or at grocery stores, shelves are bare. It's lots of people are sick out there. What's happening that we know of? Well, our COVID, you know, again, we always qualify that a lot of people are doing home tests and we don't know about those. But just what we know about, testing positivity is at 7.6%. So that's high. We want it below 5. So we know there's a lot of COVID around there. If you do look for the wastewater, what we see is that the highest areas of increase are in Blaine County and Twin Falls County. Eastern Idaho is kind of steady as she goes. In northern Idaho, up further north, it's decreasing. Kind of other parts of the north, it's kind of stable. Our city of Houston wastewater shows that we are at an elevated level, but it seems to have plateaued for now. By the way, the city of Houston is doing a good job at sequencing their wastewater, and they're showing that 9% of their samples are that XBB.1.5 that we started out talking about, Gemma. So it is here. Now, RSV, hard to know for sure, but it looks like we may have peaked maybe about 5 weeks ago. The only reason I'm kind of hedging is that I know over the holidays, there was a lot less testing. I want to see if we kind of get a new surge, but right now it appears that is, perhaps on the decline. Still a lot of it out there, but it's on the decline. And then for flu in Idaho, the highest levels are in the northern part of the state and the southwest part of the state. So still a lot of flu out there.
And what's shocking to me about that, Dr. Pate, is when you did first talk about the flu and having to look back so far. But then also, I have to tell you just anecdotally, I had to go get some tape for like a bandage the other day, and was in those aisles. And I mean, if you are looking for cold and flu remedies, man, those shelves are bare. right now.
That's right, Gemma. And I guess for, you know, there's a lot of people who really are not worried about getting infected. I think they should, but I get it that a lot of people are not worried about that. However, let me just do one plea to you. You know, at least for the next few weeks, really consider taking whatever precautions you can, because let's say nothing bad happens to you. I can guarantee you the people I'm talking to that are sick with all kinds of things, whether it's influenza or COVID or metapneumovirus or whatever it is, they're miserable. And it's just no fun, and you don't want it. And if you do get these symptoms, you may find it very hard to find things to make you feel better.
I just think it's always better not to get sick if you can help it.
Amen.
One more question. We have about 2 minutes. Another listener asked this. Can you please talk about Paxlovid versus VV116? So what is VV116, Dr. Pate?
Yeah, probably no one listening to this knows what VV116 is, but you might recognize it if I call it by its other name, and that's remdesivir. You may remember that remdesivir was one of the very first antivirals that we've had available to treat this disease, and we continue to use it. The problem with remdesivir is it has to be given by IV. And so we were typically giving it just to hospitalized patients. Now there are some infusion centers. But what scientists have been working on is, can we make it an oral form? And they did with this VV116. So now it has gone to a phase 3, which is the last trial that we need to make sure that it works and it's safe, to compare it against Paxlovid. Why do we need an alternative for Paxlovid? People are not taking Paxlovid, and this is a terrible shame. And any listener out there, if you're 50 or over particularly, and or you have an underlying health problem and you do get diagnosed with COVID, please get in touch with your doctor. Paxlovid can improve your symptoms, but it can save your life. It's very helpful. But there's a lot of people that can't take it because Paxlovid is made of two different drugs combined, and one of those has lots of drug interactions. So that's been a real problem, and just availability of it. Now, the advantage is remdesivir, almost everybody can take it. And especially if we could get it in oral form, this could be a real game changer. Now that this phase 3 study showed, it looked like it worked just as effectively as Paxlovid did. My guess is FDA will take this up rather soon. And we might see that get approved. Maybe, I don't know, maybe next month. We'll see. But very good news.
Yeah, very good news there. Well, Dr. Pate, as always, we want to thank you for coming on the program today and getting us up to date and also answering listener questions.
My pleasure.
We've been talking with Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System, as well as a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
This new year, LifeKit wants to help you succeed, because everyone needs a little help being human.
It can seem so overwhelming. You're not alone.
Who can I commit to being?
If you want to do something, then just do it. Just take that first step.
Great advice every week. Listen to LifeKit from NPR.